Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics on a, well, I guess maybe last night was the more specific, rather more exciting moment, although still an exciting moment, a little sell-off notwithstanding, because James, I'm excited, I'm happy to celebrate with you today. We have a new record all-time high for the silver price. Let's give a round of applause to all those silver investors out there that some of whom have waited 45 years for this, which is just about my entire lifetime. I think that's got you encapsulated too, James. So, where to begin? I mean, we have the record high, we have silver going up $3 in a session and then shooting even higher. And now we also have this spread that has blown out. It's come back in a little bit today. It's at $1.25, let's call it. Here is the silver futures trading under the London spot price. So, what better time to have the legendary James Anderson of SD Bullion and all around greatness here on the show to break down what the heck is going on in the gold and silver market. So, James, welcome on in. How are you today?
Doing great, Chris. Always a pleasure to talk with you and be with you and your whole crowd. And yeah, it's exciting times. I mean, here we are. We've passed the record high and it's starting to test that support. And my hunch is, probably more upside to come. I expect, given the situation, it wouldn't surprise me to see us start to run toward 55, pretty soon. Last night was exciting. It was running very well. And obviously we're retesting today, but it's all very bullish news. I think we're at the point now where, it's where's the GSR? It's at 80. It's fluctuated down to 78. You basically have a situation now where gold is just showing the fact that it's more or less revaluing. The entire system is kind of revaluing towards gold. And in that type of situation, generally silver will eventually play catch up. And I think that big money is out there. Institutional money is out there now looking at this and probably thinking to themselves, well, if silver gets like 53, 54, 55, it's starting to break out. I probably won't get fired if I allocate into silver now because it seems like it's going to start running towards 60, 70. So you're going to start to see some heavy inflows, I think. That'll be interesting because it'll be interesting to see what happens with unsecured ETFs if they can't find 1,000-ounce bars, how many prospectuses and different things they do in terms of changes in their rule books. It'll be interesting to see if they have problems, when it comes to lots of capital inflows like India is happening right now, where they have to halt ETF inflows. So yeah, these are all exciting things, and it's we are on the cusp of something. I think eventually it will be in the record books. It's something that's going to be written about in future financial history.
Yeah, you and I were talking about that on the phone last night where, I mean, it's like happened slowly over the last 2 years, but this last leg has happened so quickly. And here we are, we're in the midst of history and kind of fun to cover that. And James, don't worry, for any of those seemingly unanswered questions, I'm going to pull out my secret weapon before our call is done here today. And let's just say, my buddy Colin out there, if you're watching, you're going to be darn happy before we wrap up. But let's cut right to it and the incredible action, because yesterday, here is the silver futures 352 on the day, 353, let's call it. James, we were talking earlier in the day wondering, it's like, gee, didn't remember a $3 move in 2011. Although we see the last day before it got pummeled, it went from 45.30 to 48.70, so 3.40 there. Came down over $6 that night. Came down as much as I think it was more than $3 here. So here's our spot price, and see, this was at 1:15 a.m. We're up at 53.50. And then less than 2 hours later, or actually, if you go down here, or no, it was the futures rather that had the even bigger drop. Here you see from 52 half down to below 49 half, so over $3. And I would love to know what you were thinking as you were watching all this unfold last night, James.
So yeah, most people that are normal and not in manic phase, like we're starting to feel like silver bulls, they would be asleep when that's happening because that's like 1 to 3 a.m. But me and the rest of the nutballs in the Silver Squeeze 2.0 chat at Twitter X, we have we host a lot of spaces, so we literally talked our way through that, and we saw the price action. It's, you know, it's to be expected. You know, silver is a volatile metal. It's gonna gyrate up and down, but in a bull market, it's mostly gonna be going up. So, you know, for it to be where it is right now is expected. This morning I went ultra aggressive and started, you know, allocating some funds toward some of the miners, because I feel like, you know, that's kind of, if you run from 51 to say 60 really quickly to 70, I mean, there's going to be a lot of quick profits to be made in that. So I'm looking for some miner scalp bets. And so I put, like, you know, it's not something I normally do with my IRA funds, but this morning I did, because I saw a whole bunch of people out there saying, oh yeah, you know, this is the top, you know, you should have sold your miners, this and that, you should have taken your profits. And it's like, when I start to hear that, I feel like, okay, these people, they're kind of scared, and they've kind of been, they got Stockholm syndrome, but kind of gotten beat down so long. They think that this is the sell-off and that it'll go back in the 40s quickly. I don't think so. I think we're in a real tight situation where the spot price should start running, and it may take a week or two, but eventually I think it'll start running up higher.
Yes. Well, one of the things obviously driving that Bloomberg commented on plenty today, a lot of Bloomberg coverage of silver, understandably so right now, and fascinating the things that they are mentioning, because we have this, basically one of the big drivers is the spread, where the inventory in London on the low side. So normally futures price above the spot price, that's gotten inverted, where the spot price has risen above and really surged last week. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we can see it's about $1.25. Here's the futures. There's the spot. It's come in a little bit today. And James, a few things have happened. We have seen silver start to leave the COMEX, the 2 million ounces left yesterday. And then the spread, you can see here is when it blew out, got as wide as $3. And came back into under a dollar. Now it's a little bit wider again. Silver lease rates also came down a little bit. And in the midst of all of this, we're hearing about they had to halt additions to Indian silver ETFs. And I'm sensing from everything I'm seeing happening that it's kind of like the surge in India seems to have been the break point here, where you had an already fragile thing that eventually something was going to come along, and in this case it turned out to be that surge in India.
Yeah, I'm looking at the chart. I tweeted it today. There's 10 Indian silver ETFs that Nick Lard tracks on his Gold Charts R Us website. It's a wonderful website for silver precious metals data nerds like ourselves. There is a 20 million ounce spike up. It's the biggest, largest inflow of silver in Indian ETFs ever on these charts. And I'm guessing that that's really what set this thing off, is the fact that a lot of that silver probably came from London. I mean, as you know, we track a lot of the metals focus Indian reports. And, you know, a lot of times, a lot of that silver has to come from United Kingdom. And that's my guess is what's caused this super tight situation over in London.
And how do you see it? Do you see it getting resolved? My guess is that it's something we could see, you know, well, next week, maybe the spread narrows down, and then 3 weeks later, you know, we have the same issue. What would you say on that?
So there was rumor here, and it was in the chat, in the X chat that I saw with the Silver Squeeze guys. Somebody tweeted or something along the lines. I got to go deeper in it to make sure. But it said that India has suspended silver imports until March, I believe, of next year, right? So imagine that. That basically means that that London asked them to stop asking for silver for 6 months. That's how screwed London really is. And the fact that they're able to get India to kind of acquiesce and do that is it's cool, because you know what's going to end up happening is that, you know, if they do take 6 months off of taking silver out of London, and, you know, they won't allow their ETFs to grow anymore, it's just going to put further demand on everything, because people around the world are looking and they realize, like, oh, the system is set tight in terms of how much metal there really is. So industrial users are going to learn this information. You're going to see Western institutions learning this information, and they're going to want to get in on this because they see it's going to probably rise very quickly in the next 6 months. Because if you have to do stuff like that, where you tell an entire country of a billion people no more silver, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? That means you're you know, we're close to game on in terms of the ultimate squeeze.
Yeah, well, I guess we should just be glad that Dave isn't handling the
The stuff is
supermarket
also
too.
quite heavy, as you know. So, but well, I think
I mean, he'd
that
be
Trump's get fat.
out of luck on that one.
Yeah, that's for people who aren't like in the know. That was from Q1 of this year when gold they had a big problem of gold in London, and they had a big problem moving it around because the stuff is heavy, as you know. And like you know, if you think that stuff's heavy, like try moving around silver. It's just much bigger, much larger, and much more expensive, and it requires a lot of people moving it. So.
Probably many more lorries too, as Dave Ramsden of the Bank of England made clear.
Yeah, there's definitely gonna be a lot more lorries. So yeah, the situation is I think more extreme than most people realize. And like I said, if that Indian report that I saw today, I mean that was somebody tweeted it. I got to go deeper and make sure it specifically was citing bullion and not some type of other thing. But I'm guessing that's probably what that was. That's my guess because I would think India is what caused this and what will continue to exacerbate it. And even the Western ETFs like SLV, you know, they'll look the other way because they have their prospectus. In their prospectus, they literally say that, you know, hey, sometimes we can't get 1,000-ounce bars. So no matter what, like, we'll just take your cash and whatever. You know, maybe later we'll get it. I'm sure that, like, the other, you know, big Western ETFs like SIVR and the other ones that I would never touch with, you know, a pole. Basically, like they are probably going to look the other way and they'll allow capital inflows to come. And who knows if they have enough, you know, bars to back it up. You have to go deep into prospectus to realize whether or not they're actually following what they say they're going to do. But as you know, Chris, you know, the shorts are the ETFs. So, you know, that's who we deal with every day. In the Western world, these custodians who run these ETFs are not trustworthy institutions. So that's the situation.
Well, I hear you. And James, I mean, I guess I was wondering, and I know there's a lot of people that follow you in particular on this particular subject, because in terms of where the silver could come from to meet that demand, again, we've seen some go over to the COMEX. Now, it's interesting, some has left, presumably to go to London, conceivably to be redirected to India. Although, again, we don't know how much. I don't know, maybe 30 million ounces goes and that's it. James, do you have any thoughts? There's a view going around that the true reason that the metal came from England over to the US was on behalf of the US government. Some say that, all right, they realized it was a strategic mineral, so they loaded up their stockpile. And now, it, because again, and last part here, key thing is we don't have a global silver shortage. Now we have a deficit and conceivably we could get there, but right now it's India has a shortage, at least to see until their next shipment comes in. LBMA has a shortage. So you could say, like, at least the way it ended up, we don't know who's holding it, but it's almost as if, like, here's the US hoarding the metal, and now you're seeing shortages develop elsewhere. But do you think that and the gold is that there was government influence behind that?
I think if you have government stewards who are smart, that was the whole point of the tariff threat was to get a whole bunch of these metals to come back on shore in the United States in the hopes of, you know, eventually using them for manufacturing purposes, for reshoring industry, and stuff like that. The one thing I would suggest though is if you want to keep the metal on here in the United States, obviously, you know, London's going to do what it can to try and, you know, quell the situation in their you know, ring of the world. But you know, the COMEX has to probably think, or in the United States has to think in terms of exporting silver. We may have to end up tariffing exports of silver, right? In order to discourage silver from leaving our land, whether that be, you know, 1,000-ounce bars or any other type of scrap silver, right? Because be honest, like if you were China and you were, you know, always looking to add more in your strategic piles of silver, you'd probably be using proxies and going around the world and buying up as much scrap silver as you can because A, your refineries can handle it, unlike the US refineries that are choking down on 90% in silver ore, they can barely handle it. You know, I would be using proxies to go around and buy that 90% and taking it to China and melting it and putting it in further strategic stockpiles. So these are the types of things that I think the higher ups in the United States kind of have to think about if they're trying to play a great game of, you know, strategic reserves and critical minerals and all these other things that they have to be thinking about in terms of a world that doesn't trade as well as it used to, and a world where you know, basically everybody's kind of isolated and they're trying to reshore and get a little bit more sovereign.
Well, James, what would you say to the theorem that the source of the strategic reserves has actually been revealed in something that you helped break the story on right here, and maybe this is it?
When we look at the silver market, the one thing to keep in mind, it is a lot larger than these equity markets. You know, you put the total amount of open interest of silver, including both above ground and below ground.
Got to count both of those. So do you think that maybe the LBMA is going to access the below ground open interest?
I gotta fix my hair like Curry real quick and push it out here real fast. All right, how am I looking? Is it close? All right.
You're a good Jeff. That's nice.
The clip is always so silly. The above ground and the below, we don't know what he's talking about. It doesn't make any sense, the vernacular he's using in the industry. I've never heard of such things. So, look, when you look
hey,
at
James,
this, yeah.
I apologize for interrupting, but I think I could clear that part up. May I?
Sure.
Maybe what the second half of that plan is based on.
In terms of thinking about how are you going to create a squeeze, the shorts are the ETFs.
So the
ETFs buy
the
physical, they turn around and they sell on the COMEX.
So according to Jeff, maybe they'll just keep shorting on the COMEX until they can access the below ground open interest. But anyway, continue and I'll stop interrupting here.
Yeah, below ground open interest. Again, our joke was that's the core mantle silver that's, you know, not yet to be mined and refined. And, you know, it takes a while to bring on all those mines to do that work. So yeah, maybe 10, 20 years, we could probably, you know, start to really get some of that mantle silver. But until then, we have a situation where you have a marketplace that's in, disequilibrium, right? It's not, you have so many layers. That's the hard part a lot of times, talking to people who are just coming into this market, to understand that the silver market has many different layers. You have 1,000-ounce bar layers, and then you have the investment-grade products that retail dealers like, you know, SD Bullion and, you know, others sell. Local brick and, you know, mortar coin dealers, they sell a lot of these products too. And so there's kind of different levels. And one thing I'd like to remind people out there to understand is that, yes, there has been a lot of brick and mortar dealers who have been getting a lot of sellbacks to them over the last year. And that's why the U.S. refiners have so much 90% in scrap silver, because we always knew when we got back toward 50, there would be sellers along the way towards 50. And so of late, the news is the U.S. refineries are saying no more 90%, no more silverware for like the next 3 months, the first quarter of the year, maybe next year. You know, it might be another 6 months before you're able to sell back that stuff to them. They're just probably, all they're probably focused on is coming out with 4.9 fine bars at the moment. And so to deal with the 90%, it's a lot more messy. So there's been a huge amount of sellers on the local level, and a lot of local level sellers do that because they like to sell and get cash and have it just private and no one knowing that it happened. Whereas on our side, we're an online dealer, right? We've had a majority of buyers for a long time. It's probably 85% of our revenue or 90% of our revenue is buyers, maybe 10-15% are sellers. And of late, the search engines, like if you look at Google Trends, the Google Trends has just gone up in terms of sales at SD Bullion. September and October have been really good. I would assume October is probably going to end up being maybe our third best month in the entire, you know, history of the company. So this concept that retail is not paying attention, or that retail is not actually excited and buying bullion and or feeling FOMO because they see the spot price starting to move, well, that's a misconception, because all you're hearing is brick and mortar, you know, dealers who, yeah, okay, so they've had a lot of people selling to them, sure. And generally what you're seeing in the data that at SD Bullion is that our average buy is like generally in the 3,000s per purchase. That's the average purchase. It's gone up to 4,500. So 50% higher than what you're normally used to. And what that tells me is that you have large inflows of capital. You have $60,000 orders, $100,000 orders coming in much more regularly, skewing that data upward. And so we need to understand that there's many layers here. This is a nuanced industry, and there's a lot of details and a lot of things you got to focus on. You can't just look at one data point and then say, oh, well, that doesn't register with my brain. If there's a shortage in London and there's all this 90% in the refineries, then therefore you're a liar. That's not how this works. there's a lot of things you got to keep in your brain. It's like maybe four or five different things going on at the same time. You're trying to judge what's happening in the silver market.
Yeah, and from what I hear, which you described a bit just now, sounds like it's a bit of a mess in the retail and wholesale markets right now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not trying. I got it pulled up there. Here's on TF Metals, Craig Hemke's site yesterday. There was a post from Tyler Wall, who runs SD Bullion, mentions overall wholesale market is a total calamity. I know a lot of people read this yesterday, James. And again, you touched on it a little bit, but anything that you would add or highlight from what Tyler wrote there about what's going on the retail level?
Yeah, so I have relationships, and these relationships were before I even started working with Tyler and SD Bullion. The biggest desk in the bullion industry in North America, their portal was closed yesterday. It was still closed today, meaning you couldn't even place online orders through the portal, and they're not even showing you price quotes through the portal. And that tells me a couple things. They're overwhelmed with demand. They're overwhelmed in terms of trying to figure out how to price their products and hedge their products, given all the calamity in terms of what's happening with spot price and futures prices. So you have a whole lot of disequilibriums happening, and it's all showing up in various places that you look. So that was, to me yesterday, that was just another huge red flag. Google Trends isn't lying. Literally the searches on all the major dealers is going like this in the United States. And then you look around the world and all these dealers, like in Canada, I believe TD sold out of silver. Everything in silver is gone. You can buy gold right now, but you can't buy silver on their website. You look around at like Vietnam is having problems with product. There's a whole bunch of others that are, I know in the United States, you think it's all good, and it is for now, but it's not always going to be that way. Maybe in a month or two, you're going to have a situation where FOMO just takes over and retail actually strips out what inventory we have. Because remember, like, when you look in the United States, if you think about all the inventory on the shelves from the biggest desks in bullion all the way down to the small brick and mortars, I mean, you might have $5 to $10 billion worth of like silver, $5 to $10 billion when you add up the gold and the silver, both. Like, it's not a huge amount of capital, and it really doesn't take much to start to wipe out that inventory. And so what you're going to see right now is premiums are going to start moving up, because dealers have to guard against losing all their inventory and then not being able to restock it. And so if they sell their inventory, they have to make a decent enough margin so they can hold and cover the costs and the overheads and all the other things that requires till they can get the next inventory in. So we're just setting up for another situation where, I know that doesn't sound harmonious. It doesn't sound like everybody is buying right now. There's some people selling. But if you get the spot price going from 50 to 60 to 70, what you're going to end up seeing is people who are thinking about selling are going to say, wait a second, all these people who've been talking about triple digit silver, they might be onto something. I think I'll hold and wait. So you may end up having a market that's strictly buyers for a little while.
Okay. So sounds like you think that there's a chance we could see product shortages.
It depends. It's not going to be like, what you need to get to that level is fear. Generally, that's what propels that. So bank failures. So like 2008 global financial crisis, we had a big spell of that. The 2023 Silicon Valley banks failure runs, the ACH runs that kept happening, that produced that. Right now, what you're seeing is more of a greed-induced retail buying, or a FOMO, a fear of missing out because they think the silver price is about to run away from them like the gold price has. And that's an understandable fear, because that's probably what's going to happen. And so them coming in and buying right now is pretty high in terms of the overall volumes. And it's almost, in our history of our company, it's one of the highest months. But what I'm telling you is that it's not fear-induced yet. The fear-induced buying is coming later on, in further down in this bullion bull market. Right now, this is like more of a greed a fear of missing out type of situation in terms of buying.
Well, I know what you mean. It was interesting. I talked to my brother over the weekend, and I asked him, I'm like, hey, by the way, were you aware that silver finally broke 50 bucks? He was not. So, James, I guess that means he did not watch your fantastic Friday night video on the SD Bullion channel. So he missed out there. But I've also been thinking about how, if we did get product shortages, it's interesting the dynamic that could conceivably create, because let's say you didn't really have an overall shortage, but you had product shortages. the way people might react to it, you know, once like something isn't there, like the toilet paper at Costco effect. And along with that, I mean, I mentioned my brother because again, gold, it's been happening for a while, but silver, this is just new. And there's some degree to, for the people who aren't actively paying attention, you know, you would think over time that would grow. And especially based on if the price stays there and if the buying stays like what you've described, if we do, even if we didn't have a shortage, if we had enough to create a product shortage, it's interesting the impact that could have on retail buying.
Tautology. Yeah. Look, you have a situation, you have a simple tautology, right? Gold broke out from $2,000 and it had hovered there and fought for like 3 years to get through that level. And I kept telling people on the videos that I make all the time was like, 2000 is going to become the floor of support and we're going to rocket launch. Like, we got to get through this 2000 level. And it was really trying for 3 years. It took a long time. But then it finally went off. And what has it done? It's doubled in spot price. Well, where's silver? Silver is now sitting at the $50, you know, line that it's been, the cup and handle thing that everyone's been talking about for 45 years running. It's built this double cup and handle looking thing on its chart. So, you know, the simple math is gold's already doubled. And if silver is supposed to follow gold in a bullion bull market, what does that mean? That means triple digit silver. It's pretty simple, like third grade math, essentially, right? Like this is not rocket science. Essentially, gold has taken off and silver is starting to come out the gates. And when silver puts its shoes on, it starts to run real fast. So I understand the worry and the fear that silver's going to run away from you, because it, trust me, we'll come back when silver starts to run. It'll be 70 like this. It won't take that long.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And just in case, come on now. Had the greatest clip pulled up in my Zoom going slow. Oh, what a travesty. I'll work it in there before we finish up. Oh, did it come up there in case you need help
That's
with the math?
Your what?
My quantitative. My math specialist. Look at him. You notice anything different about him? Look at his face.
All right. Well, we'll leave that part out of there. Anyway.
Do I need to be your quant and put on some glasses real fast and just look around like... It's that Asian guy's floating like in the cliff.
Well,
go ahead. If you had a point you were going to, I was just gonna add on something about like what you're seeing a lot right now is top callers. A lot of people who are what I call part of the gold illiterati. There's also a silver illiterati. People who comment on gold and silver and are somewhat illiterate about the market. They generally will look at things like RSIs and be like, oh, this is the highest RSI ever in gold. You know, inevitably, this is going to crash. And it's like, you know, these people are
just all the technical traders just hit the X button or recommendation on that one.
I like technicals. I look at technicals. It's part of the entire broad spectrum of picture. But when you're looking at gold in a bull market, you don't use the RSI. You use the 200-day moving average and use a big data set. I would suggest going back to at least 1970 to now. So you got maybe 45 years. What is that? I'm sorry, 55 years of data. And, you know, if you look back at the 70s, how far it can get exacerbated above the 200-day moving average. I mean, it can go to 100% over the 200-day moving average. The 200-day moving average is at 3,250 roughly an ounce. And we're at 4,000. You know, think about that. You could run in the 5,000s before you ever get another time going back to the 200-day. I mean, at some point, gold will go back to its 200-day in a bull market, but it maybe not this year, and it might not be next year.
Well, I know one thing that I will be doing is watching the SD Bullion channel, where you can get updates on all of that, which we can find right here and also in the description field below. And James, something that I know you covered earlier this year, and perhaps maybe you can mix into an update or even give us a little bit of a teaser here, though. Or actually, two of them. Write down the second one. Sometimes I think of two things and then I start going on the first one, and I'm like,
got to get them out of your mouth.
Almost forgot it, but I got it. So, number one, what do you think was behind these Bank of England delays in the gold side earlier this year, where you know it happened and for a while it was 4 to 8 weeks? I don't know if he just cleared up his lorries and eventually they were able to ship it out of there, but did you think they're, because again, there's like we were talking about before there, I know Kranzler and a couple others are saying I'm not so sure that this metal came over because of the tariffs. I keep thinking, well, I never heard anyone talk about tariffing England, so it is a little weird. But did you ever hear anything more about the Bank of England delays?
I mean, that was a lot of gold, and that was a lot of silver that came flying over here. I mean, when you look at the amount of silver that's in the COMEX, we're at record highs. It's starting to go down of late, given the new tightness in London. Maybe it's down over 10 million ounces by now. But that might be the top in COMEX silver in its warehouse history, at least for the foreseeable. Generally, what happens in these things is it goes to a really high crest, and then it goes over and goes down for a long time. We have had that happen before in COVID. It did that. Yeah, you can see it spike upward and then roll over. And then those other ones back there, those rollovers and spikes in the 90s, that's like Warren Buffett draining that place for his, Berkshire Hathaway 129 million ounce hoard. So the question is, what was the problem with England? It's just they didn't, there was a lot of gold coming from London, and the central banks, like, they weren't going to lease out their gold to help out the cause. And so you had a situation where, who knows, like, they basically, it must be a mess down there. The fact that they're not able to, get enough gold, it basically means that the situation was way too tight and the demand was way too high and they could barely service. I mean, whether or not they were totally short or they had to keep waiting for refiner metals to come on, like new line refined metals from Switzerland, I'm guessing that's probably what it was. And that stuff takes time. Just flip a light, and just go grab the pallet over there. It's like, no, we're waiting for metal to come here, then to go to COMEX. That's my guess. Most of the stuff had to be newly refined.
Okay. Well, we should get Dave on this, Dave Ramsden on the show. That would be fun. Although, James, as I told you, I've not made it public yet, but it looks like we are soon going to have a guest on the Arcadia channel that I wouldn't say in its own right. It's kind of like up there with when Bart came on. Would you say that's a fair teaser for something that will...
Yeah,
making friends out there and running into some interesting people and have someone that I think is going to be joining. Need to call him later, but... So yes, and James, the other one that I wanted to ask you about, which I guess I'm going to turn that into a two-parter because there's a little addendum there, but do you care to take a crack at the whole Fort Knox thing and what happened with that?
I mean,
made a circus out of it, even Trump, and then I haven't heard anything in months.
Yeah, so I'm guessing, that's part of their tactic was when they got in was to do a whole bunch of different poking of their base when it comes to different things and basically flood the zone with a whole bunch of stories that the media had to cover. Instead of, poking at Trump, they get to poke back first, and the media has to cover all the crazy things that are happening. And so for him to come out and start talking about, Fort Knox and auditing Fort Knox and Musk running around and talking about that, I mean, it was all a clown show. I don't think that they have any intention of doing that. Ultimately, I think the American empire is going to say we have 8,133 tons for as long as it has to, and is never auditing that again. So my guess is it's not going to happen. There'll be no audits. Maybe someday they'll start to say, hey, we're adding gold, to our sovereign gold fund, I mean, the United States is 70% gold holdings in terms of their sovereign holdings is 70% allocated to gold. That's a lot higher than Russia. Russia's maybe 30%. So, I mean, we are pretty much gold bugs in the United States, whether or not it's there on paper. It's pretty strong in terms of a position. When you look right now in the world, there's been reports, Discovery Alert, it's an Australian website. They came out with a forecast that blew me away, that they said that this year there's going to be 1,300 tons of gold bought, being led by nations like Poland in the EU, like nations like China, which is underreporting, but still reporting some official reserve additions. But look, think about that. That's 1,300 tons. That is essentially one third, or just under one third, of all the new line gold and refined, all the gold supply in the world. A third of it, roughly, is going to central banks in the emerging markets, and it's doing that in the face of $3,000 an ounce. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that they're not buying bonds and that they're sick and tired of holding IOUs, especially from the United States, and they're de-dollarizing. And if you look over at China and you look at like the Shanghai Futures Exchange, for instance, and you see for 10 years their little gold warehouse, and then you look, oh my gosh, it just went up a wall. That tells you something. That tells you that there's a policy change. There's a policy shift in China. China's going for market share. They're going after London's market share in the gold market. And ultimately, what they want to be able to do is offer bilateral trading with all their partners. And if their partners want to settle up in gold, that's fine. They got the Shanghai Gold Exchange. They got the Shanghai Futures Exchange. Take your choice. There's gold there in both. So we're looking at a situation where the emerging market, the game is up. You can see the central banks. This would be the fourth year in a row of over 1,000 tons or more every year, you know, one after another, like how much more evidence do you have to see? The gold price has doubled in those 4 years, and they've gone out and bought record size. There's no data record that's even close to that. And they've done it 4 years in a row. Like, you know, how hard do you have to get hit over the head to realize things are changing?
Well, I hear you. And let's just say my man here is very concerned.
I am worried.
So you don't want to mess with that when Mohammed is not feeling it. And James, I think this will actually be the last one, although this came out yesterday. I know a lot of people saw this one too. This is Randy Smallwood of Wheaton Precious Metals. And here, I'll play it and then ask my question.
What I'm most excited about is I'm starting to hear central banks talk about bringing silver back into their reserves too. There's noise from several different banks around the world that maybe silver should be a part of their central bank reserve base, and that of course would be very exciting for silver. It's been a long time, been 20 plus years since we've seen silver held by central banks.
So I've been looking around trying to see if there was any clarification on that. Obviously, I think people have heard at this point about Russia last year, and then Saudi Arabia showed up on the SLV investor list. Jeff Christian of CPM Group did a video where he said it wasn't for Saudi Arabia, but it was for on behalf of another government. You know, the other case, still looking at some government purchasing it. Have any idea if there have been any others aside from those two that could be what he's referencing there?
No. What I think is the case, though, if we have silver as a strategic reserve and gold's already doubled in price, and you have a sovereign wealth fund and you're thinking about managing in terms of an asset portfolio, right? And you have a situation where, for instance, Morgan Stanley CIO comes out and blatantly says on a Reuters piece, with literally the title says 60-20-20 is the new portfolio, basically. So 60% stocks, 20% bonds, 20% gold. Like, that's a serious thing. That's not just some gold bug saying it. That's the CIO of Morgan Stanley saying it in modern times. Like, the portfolio theory 60-40 is done. And you need to get with having bullion as an allocation. I mean, if the institutions went out and actually went anywhere near 20% gold allocation, we'd have $20,000, $30,000 gold in a heartbeat. I mean, you just that the amount of flows that are out there, the amount of capital that's out there in the Western world. And ultimately, I think that's where we're going. The Western world is what's going to end up driving this into the ultimate mania. The Eastern's going to get it at a discount, as they've been doing. But Western world, and as we write off our debt and unfunded liability piles coming into next decade, they're the ones that are going to take this to silly prices, to price points that you never would have dreamed possible. That's what I think. And this is just one step in the process. And of course, along that way, if you're managing a sovereign wealth fund, or if you have reserves and you don't necessarily want to have everything in gold, you'd probably want to think about having some silver reserves or silver allocations in different, you know, ways. You probably want to have platinum and palladium. So the white metal power will be all three of those probably. As time goes,
metal power.
That's a shout out to the Silver Squeeze chat. We make good jokes about the white metal brethren. The silver, palladium, and platinum have all been doing extremely well this year. And so, you know, to think that those metals are just going to sit here still as gold is doubling in price, you don't know what a bullion bull market is then, if you think that that's the case. Generally, if gold starts to lead, the other three eventually follow and start to, you know, pick up pace and move along as well. So, in the end, I think that's what it is. It's just basically the concept. It's like, yeah, of course, we're not going back to silver coinage circulating as something that we use as money day to day. Look, silver is too expensive to use as circulating money. It's too valuable. What it's used for now is a store of value, like that you can hold outside the system for regular people. That's generally what silver is used for. And then it's also used to make this entire interview possible, to make everything that we do in our modern day and world like actually work and function. And as time goes on, we're going to keep discovering more and more things that we can use the white metals for. And so be it silver, be it platinum, be it palladium, all three of those are going to, they're the metals that we have to literally have to get off this rock and explore the rest of this galaxy in time, obviously.
I'll bet you got some place in Ohio where you go to and you go in, you order a hamburger and a beer and you just give them an ounce of silver and they're like, ah, there's Silver James. I'll take his currency.
Hell yeah. So, I'm sure if you get the right ownership.
A little bit of I imagine you being a badass. I haven't met you in person yet. I thought I was supposed to earlier this year.
That'll be this winter. We're coming up. We're going to have a little Florida visit, I think. But look, I wouldn't spend the silver if I can spend the fiat currency first. You know, generally, I like to spend the fiat first, unless it's somebody I have to teach about silver and kind of get them to understand the weight of it and pay them in it and kind of see their eyes light up and their brain actually fire. Then maybe I'll break out some silver and give it to them so I can plant that seed. But generally, I'd rather pay in the Dubaian fiat currency. Because remember, this year we've lost 12%. It's like a record terrible year for the fiat US dollar. On record, it's one of the worst years of all time in terms of relative loss of purchasing power versus other crappy fiat currencies. I mean, how's that?
At least Stephen Miron and the Trump administration told you it was coming. So
I know. That is true. I
appreciate that.
I do appreciate that. And that was, I mean, I appreciate the melt up in gold, and because that's essentially, this is a controlled melt up, essentially. They're allowing this. This is the release valve. Gold is definitely helping to release a lot of pressure in the system and to make the dollar soft.
Well, I hear you. And I mean, it's like we thought the prices were big last year, and then you know we found out that
those are rookie numbers in this racket.
So now we're rallying, and before we wrap up here, we can take one last look at the pricing. And also, I would like to say thank you to everyone who's watching at home. It looks like we have a big crowd on there today, James. That must be since you're, you know, a bit of a silver celebrity and all of that. But yeah, let's get our pricing pulled up. There we go. We got the gold futures, which got up to, I think it was $41.94 earlier last night or this morning as it was. Still in, they had a big dive down, almost $100. Still up 27, that looks like. Number's so darn small, and I guess I'm getting older. My glasses. Anyway, so exciting times, as you've eloquently described, and we see spot at 51.40 on silver, and the futures 50.34. So, spread coming in a little bit. And anyway, I know that if there's anything that I need to understand better, fortunately, the first place I can go is to the SD Bullion YouTube channel, where hopefully you're going to have, you can get Jeff Curry on there soon. That could be a good video. Maybe you could like document his career and, you know, which Jeff Curry interviews have been most impactful in your life, allowing you to become who you've become today. And
he has taught everything. He has taught us a lot along the way. I must say that. One other thing that's cute. I do see CNBC out yesterday. They're pumping. Now they're pumping silver. They got a silver headline that says, $100 silver, ? Analysts say the metal could double from record highs. And yeah, I mean, we just described that. It's a simple tautology. Remember, gold's already doubled. Silver's at 50. You know, all it has to do is double now to match what gold's already done. So yeah, that's the analyst tautology. It's pretty simple. Basic math.
Well, I know you have a good quant over there. And again, the link to the SD Bullion YouTube channel. I mean, you could go in here and actually type in SD Bullion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want, you just go down there and click it if you don't feel like typing. Whisperflow, by the way, great AI app. If you don't like typing, you just talk. A little tip there. And anyway, we have also James Henry Anderson at James Henry and. And James, I've always, I don't know if I've ever told you that, but I've thought for many, many a year, you're a good tweeter.
Wow, that's fun. Generally, a lot of my tweets are too dry and kind of boring, like data and stuff, but sometimes I get a little sassy and throw out some stuff.
Look, you got crazy. A girl right in the front there, and there have been times where I'd see you put something like witty and clever, and I'd be like, man, I wish I could tweet like James. trying to pick up some tricks here today.
Oh,
and
there it goes. Oh, Janet. Poor Janet. There goes the treasury seal. Oh, my gosh.
James, do you think Janet owns any silver?
Janet definitely owns her. I would imagine she owns a chain with that U.S. Mint Janet coin they made. I don't know if you saw that thing out of bronze, but it's pretty cool. I think if we have to remonetize the system, maybe down the future, we're going to use the Janet chain to do so.
Well, that would be exciting. Maybe you could do a documentary on her one day. I know we have some big Janet fans in our audience, believe it or not. Fine caliber work.
Incredible woman.
Said if the debt's on a sustainable trajectory, we're good to go. So only been like inverting the angle more directly upward for the last 80 years.
It's all good. We had a woman that she did a great job. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think you did a great job, James. So thank you for making some time today. You are one of the favorites of the silver industry, one of my favorites. And I know I'll be as bold as to speak for some people watching at home, one of their favorites too. And again, thanks everyone who is there watching live with us. Great to see so many faces here in this great time in the market. And with that said, we will wrap up. But ladies and gentlemen, one last time, James Henry Anderson. Thank you, James. We will catch up with you again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. Always fun.